This programme has been funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. Hello everyone. It's our final programme in the Heritage and Heroes series. And I have to say, we've certainly enjoyed every minute so far. And today we're coming from Sheelan National School, a school I've visited before. A really lovely place to visit. We're sort of just down the road from Crossmaglen, near or really within Haxball's Cross, in an area called Sheelan. And again, you're joining myself, Dr. Alison Lennon, and Liam Gormley. Okay, so again, throughout the programme, Liam will ask me a few questions and enjoy the show. Hello everyone, welcome back. Today we're at Skull Fríde Bríde. Can you say it properly, girls and boys?
Skull Fríde Bríde.
Oh, that's beautiful. You say it so much better than me. Welcome everyone, and thank you for having us in this lovely school. It's great to see all these boys and girls who I know are going to be so brilliant at archaeology today. Today we're going to talk about this area where you are. And where you are is quite interesting, okay? Because you're very near South Armagh, we're in North Louth, we're not too far from South Down, and there's a lot of interesting monuments around here. It's a very interesting area, and you're also part of the Ring of Gullion, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But before we do, I'd like to sort of ask you all, is it nice living around here?
Yes.
Okay. What's the nearest towns or villages to this school? Everyone together, just say out loud.
Dundalk.
And in any other big town?
Inniskeen.
And isn't there another town up the road here? Crossmaglen's near here, isn't it? So you have a lot of towns around you, and those towns have a lot of history. Do any of you know of any castles near here? Has any of you studied the castles? Yes. We're going to hear from one of the students. What castle do you know about?
Roach Castle.
Roach Castle. And that's not too far from here, is it?
No.
And did you know it was built by a woman? Did you know that, guys?
Yes.
A woman called Rohisha de Verdon. Have you heard that name? Yes. Our granddad founded the town of, do you know which town he built? Dundalk. Did you know that, her grandfather? Mm-hmm. And there's a famous story about Rohisha, can anyone tell me the famous story of what she did after the castle was built?
She murdered the architect.
She murdered the architect, exactly. What did she do?
She pushed him out the window.
She pushed him out the window. Isn't that dreadful? Yeah. After him building a lovely castle for her. But that's Dundalk women for you. If you mess with us, you get pushed out the window. Isn't that right, girls?
Yeah.
I remember being here before with some of the other students, and in their back gardens they had an earthwork or some sort of a... One of them had a souterrain, actually, an underground tunnel. Have any of you ever seen anything around here that was a bit unusual, or has anyone ever heard of anyone digging anything up? Can you think of anything? Because I remember, I know that there's a ringwalk not too far from here. It's a very, very interesting area. And it's interesting because you're on the border. And any town or village or land that's on the border, especially in Ireland, would have defensive buildings. We had the Anglo-Normans in the Pale. You've heard of the Pale, have you? I want to talk about that. And then you had the Gaelic-Irish. And there was a lot of sort of fighting between them. So there was various structures built by the Anglo-Normans to sort of keep the Gaelic-Irish at bay. But we also have history going right back to the Mesolithic and Neolithic period around here, a long, long time ago, and we're going to talk about that, okay? So by the time we finish today, you're going to know a bit more about that. Now, the final question. Do you know what an archaeologist is? What do you think an archaeologist does? Anyone? Okay, well, an archaeologist finds things from the past to try and figure out how people lived a long time ago. What food they ate, what clothes they wore, what weapons they used. And one of the main things we do is excavate. Does anyone know what excavation is? If anyone knows, come up and tell me. Come on up here. And to excavate something. What do you think that is?
Digging up stuff.
Digging up stuff. Very good. Yes, good girl. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to the next slide. Now, this is a very interesting timeline for Ireland. So we start off here at the very top, and just to tell our listeners, it's like a line going sort of from the very beginning of Irish that we know about, Irish origins, right up to the arrival of the Anglo-Normans. And the first thing we have is Ogrims, the Ogrim stones, and they were the first type of alphabet in Ireland, okay? And then we move on to this name, Palladius. Has anyone ever heard of Palladius? Well, he was actually the first Christian bishop that came to Ireland. He came before St. Patrick, but he's not very well known. And then we have St. Patrick, who arrived in the 5th century. We find things at this stage. There was a water mill uncovered in County Cork that was dated to the year 630 AD. So we know water mills were in existence then. And then we have the foundation of Iona, a very, very important religious community in an island of Scotland. And then we have crannogs. Has anyone ever heard of a crannog? A crannog is like a wooden structure built in the middle of a lake, okay? So if you look at it here, you'd have this sort of settlement. People would live here, and they'd go out into the lake. Now, you'd be able to walk on a walkway over to it, and they built these fascinatingly. And, I mean, we're talking about, let me see, 500 AD, so a long time ago, when you'd built these crannogs in the lake, these wooden houses, up on sort of stilts that people would live in. And then we have the Book of Durrow. It was found, four Gospels, beautiful manuscript, and it was found about the year 650 AD. The Tara Brooch. Has anyone ever heard of the Tara Brooch? Well, the Tara Brooch actually wasn't found in Tara. It was found in Bettystown. Has anyone ever heard of Bettystown?
Yeah.
It's a seaside place not far from here, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there was two boys walking along the beach, and they found this old brooch. And it turned out to be the Tara Brooch. It's up in the National Museum now. And it's a beautiful example of Celtic jewellery that was uncovered. And then we have the Ardagh Chalice was found as well. And again, it's also gorgeous Christian metalwork. And it's in the National Museum. Then the 9th century, the Vikings arrive. And they start constructing the town of Dublin. Around this time, we also find the Book of Kells. Has anyone ever heard of the Book of Kells?
Yes.
It's actually in Trinity College, where I was studied. And again, it's a beautiful manuscript. That was uncovered. We have the Vikings raid in Ireland at this stage, and we're starting to see the first round towers. Does anyone know what a round tower is?
Yeah.
Yeah? Could you tell me what it is? Because there's round towers in County Louth, and there's also round towers in a place called Glendalough. But could someone shout out what they think a round tower is, or what it was built for? Okay, come on over and tell me. So we can describe them. They were very tall and they were made of stone. And what do you think they were built for?
So that people could see outside their castle, so that they had the height to see.
Yes, and what were they doing? Were they trying to keep themselves safe?
Yeah, from Vikings.
From Vikings. And they were made of stone, they were tall, and the entrance was on the first floor, so that people couldn't get into them. There would be wooden steps up to the first floor, and if they were being attacked, they would push the steps away so people couldn't get up into them. Very good, well done. Okay, and then we have the Battle of Tara in 980, which was between the Irish and the Vikings. And we also then have the Battle of Hastings. This is in England, when the Normans invaded England before they invaded Ireland. And that's where we first see Martin Bailey castles, which I'm going to talk to you about. And then we have the Norman invasion of Ireland towards the end of the 12th century. And the final thing here is St. Patrick's Bell, which was supposed to be a bell belonging to St. Patrick's that was uncovered. And we actually again have that in the National Museum. So this is some of the archaeology of Ireland and some of our sort of timeline of when we were invaded. We have prehistory and then we have history, which I'm going to talk to you about. So, how people lived long ago. So, for our listeners, we're going to look at the houses people lived in long ago and talk about the way they lived. And some of the students will describe the pictures for our listeners of the various houses that people lived in. And we actually have three pictures of people here. And I'm wondering if someone can come up here to me and tell me, describe these three pictures for our listeners. Would someone come up? Okay, and here we have, we're going to, listeners, we've got three pictures here, and we're going to have this great student describe. What do you think the first picture's of?
Of people from the Stone Age trying to make a fire.
Trying to make a fire, and they're in a cave of some sort, aren't they? What is the second picture of?
Of a Viking.
How do you know?
Because of his helmet.
And what's he got sticking out of the side of the helmet?
Horns.
Horns, yes. That's a very seminal picture about Vikings. And the last one, what do you think that is?
Norman Knights.
Norman Knights. Very, very well done. Good girl. Thank you. Okay. Mesolithic Ireland. Can we say that word? Mesolithic Ireland. It's a bit of a funny word, isn't it? Well, we're talking about the earliest known people that we know came to Ireland or were living in Ireland. And this is the Mesolithic people. And we think they came over from Britain, most likely on boats, in the year 8000 BC. They were hunter-gatherers. Does anyone know what that means? What would they have been hunting? Yeah. Come on, guys. What do you think they would have been hunting? How would we think about that? What do you think?
Food,
yes. Animals and maybe fish. And gatherers means they were hunter-gatherers. So they would have had fruit, nuts, berries, as well as hunting larger animals like deer. They would have fished the surrounding area. So they would have used weapons like this. Now, can someone come up and tell the listeners what this looks like? I'm going to give this now to one of our students, and he's going to describe for the listeners what it looks like and if it's heavy or light. What do you think of that?
It's kind of like something you would use for like a spear.
A spear. And what's it made out of? Is it made out of...
Sort of like flint or rock.
Yeah, rock, good man, stone. And is it sharp?
Yeah.
Yeah, good man, thank you. So that's for our audience. Good, that's great. What we have here would have been the top of a spear. Now, it's still sharp, and that's about 10,000 years old, okay? And it's still sharp. Now, what would it have been connected to? A piece of
wood.
Why do you think the wood isn't here? Why do you think the wood's gone?
Decomposed.
And we're going to talk about decomposing in a little while when we have an activity that the listeners can listen to. So, that's our spear. Most of the Mesolithic sites we've found in Ireland have been close to water. Why would they have wanted to live close to water? What would they have gotten from water? We have to think about this, listeners. I mean, they're building their settlements and they're building near water. Here, one of our students is going to tell us why.
They would have had a constant food source because of fish.
Very good, very good. What else would you have used water for?
They would have used water to clean themselves.
Clean themselves. And also?
To drink.
Good, very good. Thank you. That's excellent. Also, there would be woods near water. You would often find that wherever you had rivers, they would normally have a lot of wild food. There could be heavy wooded areas. And in woods, what do you get from a wood? What do you get from a wood? What makes a wood?
Fire,
because we're talking about wood. So we would use it for fire. What else would you use wood for? Just think about this. What would we use wood for?
Making weapons.
Making weapons, very good for the spears. And what else would you do with wood? Can you think about this? So very good, you'd make weapons, you'd use it for fire, and what else?
And making like other things like houses.
Very good, a building material, very good, okay. So, some of the best known sites in Ireland, Mesolithic sites, where Mesolithic people lived, are in Limerick and in Derry, and we're going to look at one now. This is Mount Sandal in County Derry. It's a very, very famous site. It's where the first Mesolithic people lived. Actually, to be honest, these are reconstructions because this material would have decomposed, okay? There was the remains of some lightweight timber structures identified. There was the remains of some sort of hearths or sort of where they would light a fire for warmth and cooking. And also at the site in Limerick, they found the first evidence of some sort of ritual burials. Something about the way they buried their dead, which we will talk about more. But now, can I have someone with a good big strong voice to come up and tell me what these settlements look like, okay? I want you to describe for the audience what these first houses look like.
It's sort of like a cone shape.
Like a cone shape. Like an upside down cone.
Yes. Yeah.
And what do you think that's on top of them? See this bottom one here. What do you think that's covering it?
Straw.
Straw and mud and anything else they can get their hands on. Thank you very much. So remember that for the Mesolithic, they lived in houses that looked like a wigwam covered in straw, or else an upside down cone. Okay, so that's the Mesolithic. And also we have to know a bit about how they lived. So what we found, or what archaeologists found at these sites, was something known as microliths, which are like tiny, tiny flint blades. Okay, now we're going to get someone from the audience up to have a look at this. Could we get someone, let me see, could you come up? Now, this is an arrowhead, okay? Can you put that in your hand? Now, it's quite small, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, but see the ones on the screen? How small are they? How many of them are fitting on that finger, the top of a finger?
Three of them.
Three of them are on the top of a finger. And that's why they're called microliths, because they're so small. But then we also find larger flint blades, and they would have been about this size. Now, can you tell the audience how big that is? Will it fit in your hand?
Yes.
Yes, it's a lot bigger and it's a lot heavier, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, are they both sharp?
Yeah, very.
Considering how old they are, yeah. Thank you very much, okay? So we know that they use these tools, okay, these flint tools to hunt, all right? So the Mesolithic people were hunter-gatherers, we have to remember that. And then we move on to the Neolithic people. And this is when we first see farming in Ireland. Are there any farmers in this classroom? Two farmers. I would have thought living out here there'd be loads of farmers. Not often. There's two farmers, okay? All right. And when these people started arriving, what archaeologists started finding was signs of different types of food. Because now we're seeing different crops. Okay, when we dig up Ecofax, which are a type of artifact, we're finding different crops. And also we now have more domesticated animals. Suddenly archaeologists are finding the bones of animals like cows and sheep and goats. Okay. Also, they started to settle in particular areas. The Mesolithic people would move from one area to another depending on where the best hunting was or where the best fishing was. But the Neolithic people started settling in one place. Okay, and we also find a lot of pottery, much more artifacts than for the Mesolithic period. We find pottery, we're finding axes, we're finding different instruments for grinding corn. So they lived in a different type of house, a more rectangular shaped house. And we found these all in a lot of places in Ireland, in Limerick again, in Mayo, in Kildare, in Waterford. So I'm wondering if somebody could maybe try and describe one of these houses for me. Would someone like to do that? Yeah. Someone's going to come up and describe these houses for our listeners. So let's have a look. So again, they have this sort of straw roof, don't they?
Yeah.
But they're not round, are they?
No.
What shape are they? They're like more square or rectangular, aren't they? And what are these? Wooden posts.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you see the way they all come up to this straight roof on top.
Yeah.
And you see inside here the heart of the home, well, the heart literally, where they lit their fire to do all their cooking and everything. And again, what are they covered in? What's the roof covered in? Is it like straw? Does it look like straw?
Yeah, straw.
Good girl, thank you. And it's right down, you see the way it's very low down the roof, isn't it? It's quite unusual. So you had these sort of rectangular shaped houses that slanted up to the roof. You had this long straight roof, and then the roof almost went down to the ground, and you had this small entrance going into the houses. So they're a bit different than the Mesolithic, aren't they? Okay, thank you. Now, remember I talked to you earlier about how burial was important to the people in the Neolithic period. People then were very interested in death and about where people went and how their bodies had to be treated in order for them to go from one world to the next. And it's here we start seeing something called megalithic tombs. Because everyone say that. Megalithic tombs. Very good. And there's four different types. There's core tombs, portal tombs, wedge tombs, and passage tombs. And we're going to have a look at them, okay? We're going to have a look at some of these. And here we have one called Ballymacdermot Core Tomb, which isn't too far from here. Has anyone visited this before? No? and we have a plan of the courtroom. Right? This is what's left now, which looks like a ring of standing stones. That's a picture of the Ballymacdermot, with also some stones behind it as well. But up here is what it would have looked like. So it's sort of long, it's rectangular in shape, and it gets wider at one end. And there would have been a large forecourt and a number of burial chambers inside this building, this construction. And burial chambers are where they would have put people who died. And they would have also put grave goods in with them. Something for them to take from this world to the next. Maybe there would have been chalices or their favourite jewellery or their favourite cloak or their favourite swords. And they were put in these passage tombs with them when they died. And it was all tied up in their beliefs, okay? These are the other three type of tombs, the portal, the passage and the wedge tomb. So the first one on top is my favourite type of tomb. Could anyone tell our listeners what this tomb looks like? Yeah? Come on up and tell our listeners. So what does that top picture look like?
There's three big stones with a flat one on top of them.
That's exactly right. Thank you. That is a portal tomb or a dolmen. And we have one here in Dundalk, not too far from here, called the Prolik Dolmen. Has anyone been to see it?
Yeah.
Could someone come up and describe what it was like to me? What is the Prolik Dolmen like? It's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Is it similar to that?
Yes.
But do you think the capstone's bigger in the Prolik Dolmen?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you notice on top of the Prolik Dolmen there was little pebbles?
No.
Did you notice that? Because it's very high up, you mightn't have seen that. And do you know what they're for?
No.
It's a superstition in Dundalk that if you throw a pebble on top of the Prolik Dolmen and it lands and stays there, you'll be married within the year. So my advice, guys, is never throw any stones on top of the Prolik Dolmen, okay? Thank you very much for your help. Okay, the second one, which is a... Well, actually, just one for a minute on the portal one, on the dolmen. Yes, three large standing stones with a huge capstone on top of it. And at the minute, it looks like you could see through them, aren't they? The standing stones are separated from each other. But it would have been wrapped. Okay, there would have been walls made out of straw and twigs, okay, and sand. And the person was buried inside here. Now, we have a lot of these in Ireland, some magnificent portal tombs. And all, again, tied up with death and ritual for the Neolithic people. So, could someone describe this one to me? What does this one look like? Or could take a guess of where this is? Can we have someone up to talk about that? What does it look like?
It's very big and there's a lot of stones in it.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you're looking, you're actually inside this passage looking out. And do you know where this is?
No.
This is on top of Slieve Gullion. Good boy. Has anyone in this class been to Slieve Gullion?
Yes.
It's a great place, isn't it?
Yes.
And has anyone ever gone to the very top of it and seen the burial tomb? Yeah. Well, this was a burial tomb. It's caught up in a lot of myths by Finn McCool. And it's also the highest passage tomb in Ireland. So it's interesting to note that. And again, this would have been where people were buried, inside the chamber. And the bottom one is a wedge tomb, which was shaped like a wedge of orange. And we have one again near here, beside the Prolik Dolmen at Ballymac. And these were more constructed towards the end of the Neolithic period. In fact, some archaeologists believe that these actually were constructed more towards the Bronze Age. But anyhow, we have these all over the place, and we have a lot of them in this area. We're going to look at some of them later on. And then we come to Bronze Age Ireland, okay? And Bronze Age Ireland is when we start seeing metalwork in Ireland. Do you know the way there, guys, we were looking at spears and arrowheads made out of stone? Well, now in the Bronze Age, we start seeing metal, okay? And these new metal objects were, at the beginning, were made out of copper. And mainly what we found, archaeologists, was axes and daggers. Our archaeologists believe the copper came from Ross Island in Killarney, because this is where we know there was a copper mine in the Bronze Age period. But as time went on, we started to find more wonderful Bronze Age tools. Yes, even their swords and spears become more intricate. And we also find jewellery, beautiful, beautiful items. And now we're looking at gold jewellery. And here are two examples of them. We have a torque on the bottom and a lanula at the top. Could someone describe these for our listeners, what they look like? Because, just to say, they're absolutely beautiful, and you can find both of these in the National Museum, in the National Archaeological Museum in Dublin. So what's the top one look like?
The top picture looks like a necklace.
It's a bit like a necklace. It's a very wide necklace, like a collar, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's sort of flattened. They would have flattened it to make it very flat. And very well-off women in the Bronze Age would have worn these around their necks. And what do you think the second picture's of?
A bracelet.
A bracelet. And can you describe it to our audience?
It's like ringy.
Ringy. Twisty. Twisty. Good girl. And both of them are made out of gold, aren't they?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. The torque bracelets would have gone round the arm. And as our lovely friend here said, it was sort of, what was the word you used?
Ringy.
By that she means twisted. It's sort of twisted around the arm. Again, these are beautiful, beautiful, intricate pieces of jewellery. And archaeologists have found quite a few of them in Ireland. Now we also are seeing rituals to do with burial. But what we have here are called cists. And again, these burials would have had grave goods with them, like little pots for food, for them to take from one world to the next. Bronze Age cremation. So cremation is now what we see. We see that when people die, their bodies are burnt, okay, and they're buried in these cists. There's one actually here in County Louth in Carnmore. And what it was like a pit that was lined with stone slabs, and the person was buried in the middle of it in a sort of crouched position. Okay, and we've uncovered a fair number of these in Ireland, and as I say, some here in County Louth. So that again is Bronze Age burials. You have to remember these because we're going to have a wee quiz in a while. Now, the housing. So for the first time we start seeing stone walls in housing. And there's plenty of these because these structures were made of stone. We have quite a few. In fact, there's one not far from here. There was two houses found not far from here in a place called Plaster out in Newry Road. And there was the foundations for two Bronze Age houses uncovered recently. They had south or east facing entrances, and they sometimes would even have a type of porch on the front of them, so they're getting quite fancy now, their houses. And the roof again would have been sort of cone shaped, although more wider. Here we start finding that they have outdoor fires. Okay. Also we start seeing now large settlements, okay, hill forts, where there would be a lot of people living, okay, hilltop enclosures. And they were built in sort of prominent places so that you could see them from a distance and they could see you from a distance so that they could protect themselves if you were coming to attack them. So would someone come up to me here at the top and describe what this house looks like? Okay, so the first thing is, what is on the bottom of it? What was it made of?
Stone.
Stone. And what shape is it, the bottom of it?
It's like round.
Round, circular. And the roof. What do you think of the roof?
It's made out of grass.
Well, yeah, it's covered in grass. Grass is growing on top of it. There would have been straw. There would have been thatch, a type of thatch. And it's also a bit like an upside-down cone, but it's a lot wider, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what about... I think we fit more people in there, do you?
Yeah.
Because it looks bigger. Remember, what was the one, the Mesolithic one? Do you think it was big or small, the first one we looked at?
Small.
Compared to this, yeah. Thanks for your help. That's great. Okay, and then we come to the Iron Age. Okay, now the strange thing is, even though the Iron Age is not as far back in history as the Mesolithic or the Neolithic or the Bronze Age, it's actually a period where we don't have much evidence. Like, you'd think there'd be more evidence because it wasn't so long ago. But actually, there's not as much evidence in Ireland for these people as there was for the Mesolithic and the Neolithic and the Bronze Age. Again, the houses were circular, like the Bronze Age. Cremation, again, they're still burnt, they're dead. That was part of the sort of rites that they had. It was characterised, this period, by iron tools and weapons. And it's also associated with the arrival of the Celts to Ireland. Has anyone ever heard of Celtic Ireland?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big thing, isn't it? The Celts in Ireland. And it was during the Iron Age that we have this crossover with the Celts arriving in Ireland. And we start using Celtic language, okay? Now, we think that they probably arrived over. We don't think there was a huge invasion as such. We think the Celts arrived in Ireland and started settling here. But again, it's a strange time because we don't have that much information about it. Okay, so what we're going to do, we've looked at a lot of information there, is, do you remember someone said earlier, the reason we don't have the wooden part of an arrow or a spear is because it decomposes, yeah? Well, the reason that archaeologists can find out anything about the past is because some material lasts for a very long time, like stone, okay, or copper, or iron.
We're here at Sheila National School, located on the road to Crossmaglen. Could you tell our listeners about the area?
I could, of course, Liam. And you know, it's a very interesting place to visit. As I said at the beginning of the show, I've actually been to the school a couple of times, given archaeological workshops. And what is interesting is that the school children are very, very involved with their local landscape. I remember on my first visit, one of the members of staff approached me and told me she'd some sort of earthwork in her back garden. It may have been a ring fort, and some of the children also mentioned other earthworks in the area that I didn't know anything about. So there must have been some sort of settlement, ancient settlement in this area of Sheila. When we recorded these programmes, I often noticed the interest children have in their local surroundings. They love hearing about sites that they've passed but they don't know much about. One thing we really hope to accomplish is to get children interested in visiting these sites. Places like Roach Castle, one of the finest examples of a defensive castle in Ireland, is unknown to many children in North Louth. And that always amazes me. Castle Roach is dramatically situated on a rocky outcrop not far from Sheila National School. It has a sub-triangular curtain wall. If you actually go online and look at aerial photographs, if you go online and look at aerial photographs of Roach Castle, you'll see what I mean by a sub-triangular curtain wall. A curtain wall basically is the wall that goes around the castle. And it has a large hall at the southern side. In the east wall is a twin-towered gatehouse, one of the very first twin-towered gatehouses in Ireland. It is an unbelievably special place for a castle. It is such a strategic site. There are steep drops on the south and west sides with a steep slope on the northern side. It is believed to have been built in 1236 by Rohisha de Verdon after the death of her husband, and we mentioned her grandfather Bertram as the founder of the town of Dundalk. Rohisha was an interesting character. There's a story goes around that she promised her hand in marriage to the architect who would build her a castle at Roach. And on the eve of the wedding, after the castle had been built, she asked her husband to peer out of a large window and view the lands he would now possess when they got married. Then she pushed him out the window to his death in order that no one could copy the plans of her castle. And the window is still known locally as the Mordor Window. And in fact, his ghost is said to haunt the ruins of Castle Roach. I don't know if that's true or not, but there you go. When we visit schools and tell pupils this story, they are immediately eager to visit the castle. And that gives me a great sense of achievement.
Is there a specific monument you would recommend people visit in the area around Sheila and Crossmaglen?
I think I'd have to say the Annaghmer Court tomb. It's one of the best preserved examples of its type anywhere in Ireland, and many of its features have been preserved in situ after they were first revealed during an excavation in the mid-1960s. It stands on a localised rocky outcrop
in sort of boggy land. There's a rocky outcrop, but surrounding that is boggy land, which has now been planted with trees. And it's a horseshoe-shaped forecourt. The forecourt itself is at the southern end of the tomb, and it's actually really interesting when you visit it, because there are these several large stones which are up to 2 meters high, and they're standing upright. The space in between are filled with dry stone walling. And the most unusual feature of the forecourt is a small standing stone in the southeast of the centre of the forecourt. The cairn, which we mentioned before, was sort of a pile of stones, and it's some sort of a marker or memorial. It stands about 2 metres above the natural ground level, and it narrows towards the north, and it is also defined by a mixture of upright stones and dry stone walling. And inside it, there are actually three rooms, around 7 metres long. Although the outer chamber has been badly disturbed, and had been badly disturbed before the excavation, both the other two chambers actually had various archaeological finds, burial deposits, which showed that there was at least two cremations. There was also the fragmentary unburnt remains of a child and an adult female. So, you know, as I said, it was a burial site. Finds included flint scrapers, a fine javelin head. There was numerous pieces of property and a canine tooth, which archaeologists reckon was probably from a bear. Now, of course, that doesn't mean we'd bears in Ireland. It was probably brought over in some sort of trade. But it was a very interesting find. Intriguingly, the inner chamber also produced some evidence for Neolithic activity on the outcrop itself before the tomb was built. So was there a settlement there? We don't really know. Core tombs are named after these forecourt, as I mentioned in one of the other programmes. And there are more than 400 examples in Ireland. And most of these are sort of north of a line between Carlingford and Sligo. And there are actually 8 examples in County Armagh. But as I said, Annaghmar is probably my favourite, and I really would recommend a visit to it. And like County Gorry, I would advise you to go onto the Ring of Gullion website, and you can see a ring of reconstruction of the core tomb, which will give you a far better idea of what you're looking at when you go to the site. It's not far from Crossmaglen. It's well signposted and well worth a visit.
You said you want the children in Louth, Armagh and Down to become aware of the history and archaeology in their surrounding areas. These programmes are one way of encouraging children to go out and visit these monuments. Can you suggest any other ways?
Liam, we're winding down. This is our final programme, and we're coming to the end of our series. And it was a real pleasure to go into these schools and listen to these children and talk to them about their local landscape and their local monuments. It's strange because you visit schools and you talk to young children or, you know, young adults or whatever, or people in general. And sometimes you find people in certain areas are truly aware of their monuments, very proud of their monuments, even get involved in conservation or cleaning up of their monuments. And then other places you visit or other areas, people don't know what's down the road from them. I suppose, you know, I became interested, as I said, the very first programme, I became interested in local archaeology and history through my parents, and I think parental involvement is a must. Now, I'm a mum myself, and I know they can be very expensive to entertain your kid. Everything costs money. The cinema, Pirates Den, God help us, Tato Park. And while the children enjoy these day out, they can be costly, stressful, and let's be honest, boring for the parents. But if you look online, you will find dozens of monuments and sites all over this region, most of which are free in. So what I would encourage, and what I do myself, because I'm practicing what I preach, is pack a picnic, head off in the car, and maybe visit Narrowwater Castle, which I mentioned in our programme on Uri. It's free in, and I know that when we take, you know, Ava and our cousins, the kids love exploring the floors of the castle and going up and down the stairs and checking out all the wee details. So then, once you're there for a while, and as I said, there's a ranger there, so we can give you more information about the castle, we head off again and we go to Green Castle, which is past Warren Point, near Cliquiel. And it's actually the site called Cranfield. There's a lovely beach there. And Green Castle is a fabulous castle. It was built in the 13th century by Hugh de Lacy, who we also mentioned before, to defend the southern approaches to Ulster. And this royal castle, because that's what it was, stands on a sort of a rocky height. It's not high up. It's not as high up as King John's Castle across the loch. But it is built up there. It's surrounded by a rock-cut ditch. And it commanded the ferry link, which in the medieval period there was a ferry link between Carlingford. And it would have defended sea and land, the sea and land of the area, so Carlingford Lock and the area around the castle. And due to various attacks on the castle, the building that's there now, is a mix of 13th to 16th century structures. And clearly visible from the opposite shore is Carlingford Castle, King John's Castle, which was also built by Hugh de Lacy. Now, not many sites in Northern Ireland can lay claim to being besieged and captured by Edward the Bruce, but Green Castle was in 1316. And despite being wrecked on many occasions, the castle actually continued in use. It was continually in use until the early 17th century. The castle is sited at Cranfield. There's a lovely beach there. The kids can swim and enjoy your picnic. And the only thing you need to pay for is a petrol, because Green Castle is also free in. And, you know, Green Castle over the summer, like Narrowwater Castle, has various events. There's a medieval feast day there, and there's various tours. I've myself given sort of tours of the castle on a few occasions. So there's a lot of stuff going on if you just keep an eye out on the internet for what's happening at Green Castle or Narrowwater or any of the other sites. If you wanted to do something in Dundalk, you could walk to Cahullin's Castle, which is sited at the back of the wall, a well-known area of Dundalk. The ruin of a late 18th century castellated house is there, which we talked about in the programme of Dundalk. It's known as Burns Folly. And it stands on top of the mound of Castletown Mount. It was built, as we said, we mentioned this in the very first programme, by Patrick Byrne, a well-known pirate. It's free to visit this site. It's an important site. In Irish mythology, it's said to be the birthplace of Cuchulainn, the legendary warrior. I have taken my daughter and her friends or her cousins to visit, and they love running around the castle and peering into the souterrain and its base. We actually went on a lovely summer's day and brought a picnic, and the children entertained themselves all afternoon playing hide and seek and exploring the castle. And what was even better was they wanted to know everything about the castle, who built it and why it was called Cuchulainn's Castle, and had there ever been any battles there and how old it was. I enjoyed that as much as they did.
Sleave Gullion. Okay, we've talked about Sleave Gullion and its wonderful passage tomb. And as I say, there's a number of myths associated with Sleave Gullion. Tell me the things you like most about Sleave Gullion. Out loud, everyone. What do you like about Sleave Gullion?
The views,
the walks.
The forest,
okay, the wonderful forest. There's also a lot to do in Sleave Gullion, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like what? What is there to do? Out loud.
You can go up to the top and look at.
Yeah, you can climb to the top of it and look at the views. And there's some lovely walks in it as well. But also the thing about Sleave Gullion is that there is a lot of archaeology along Sleave Gullion. It's a very interesting place for archaeologists to visit. As I said, there's also a portal tomb at Sleave Gullion. Now here we have Clann Lum Carn. Okay, can we say that? Clann Lum Carn. And it's on Sleave, it's overlooked by Sleave Gullion, it's just beside Sleave Gullion. And again, it's a sort of a core tomb, okay? And you can see what it would have looked like. There's very little of the remains now, but there would have been, see the way you can see this here? This would have been covered by a capstone. So it's a sort of square shape, although it's got very soft edges. There's loads and loads of stones on top of it, like a cairn. And then you had this area in the middle of it where people would have been buried, okay? And again, it isn't far from here. It's only up the road. It's not far. It's just beside Schlieve Gullion. And there are some upright stones inside it again, a bit like you'd find on a dolmen. Fahart. Who knows Fahart? Now, Fahart is where my mum is from, so I am very, very fond of Fahart. Has anyone ever visited Fahart? Does anyone know? Could anyone come up and talk a wee bit about Fahart? Like, what is there at Fahart that's very famous that people come from all over Ireland and indeed all over the world to visit? Belongs to a particular saint. Can you come up and talk to us about it?
St.
Bridget Shrine. And there's a number of ballam stones. Do you know what a ballam stone is? Where you can go, if you have something wrong, just say I have bad knees. Well, in St. Bridget, you can actually go, and there's stones with a sort of, not a hole, but an indent in it, where you can kneel down and put your knees, and it's supposed to help your knees. There's a place where you can put your eye, or you can put your head if you have headaches, all different types of ballam stones that are there to help you. But St. Bridget Shrine is very, very famous. It's associated with St. Bridget, who's meant to have lived and maybe even have been born in Fahart, okay? Have you been there a few times?
Yeah.
We ever there for the St. Bridget, they have a festival, and then there's a Bridget Walk. Have you ever done that?
No.
No, it's lovely. Like, my mum would be involved with that. St. Bridget would have a very special meaning to people in the area of Fahart. Thank you. Has anyone ever been up at St. Bridget's, the graveyard, where the old church is in Fahart?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've been there. Now, it's very famous as well, archaeologically speaking. You have a number of wonderful features there. There's the remains of a round tower. There's an old well. And it's also reputed to be the place where King Edward the Bruce is buried, okay, after the Battle of Fahart. So it's a place well worth visiting. It's a wonderful piece of archaeology. Let me see. And there's also actually, you know what, remember we were talking about Mott and Bailey's? There's actually a Mott there in Fahart as well, a Norman Mott. So it's an area with an awful lot of archaeology. And again, it's not far from here. Okay, this is Ballykeel Portal Tomb. And again, it's on Schlieve Gullion, so it's not hard to get to. You have this wonderful capstone on top of it, and these three standing stones, which one of the students described to me earlier. It was excavated at one stage, and what they found was that there was a stone line graved, or a cyst, near this, okay? And the entrance to the portal tomb is overlooking Forkill River. When they excavated this tomb, the archaeologists actually found bits of Neolithic pottery and some flint tools that we looked at earlier. And the capstone had slipped off, actually, at one stage, and the back stone was split, and this was reinstated with a crane. So some work was done at Ballykeel, but it's a magnificent portal tomb. But before we go on to look at any more of these monuments, I want to just have another quick quiz, okay? And I want you to look here at what we have up here. So, to tell the listeners, the first thing is a castle, a view of a castle, and the view of a side of the castle, which, although the picture isn't the clearest, there would have been a sort of a ditch here to stop people getting up to the castle. The next is an iron sort of gate at the front of the castle that would have come slamming down, and it was made out of sort of lines of steel, and it was the same shape as the top of the entrance. So it was sort of a round arch and then a gate that came slamming down. And then over here we have a sort of bridge that inside the castle, using chains, the people inside the castle could have pulled up and down to let people in or out. Then we have a roof, the roof of a hall as you go into a castle with a number of holes in it. Then we have a stone sort of feature at the top of the castle where you'd have a row of blocks
and then there'd be a gap, another row of blocks, and then there'd be a gap. We're trying to figure out that what that for. Then we have a wall around a castle with a number of towers in it. But what we're really interested here is the building in the middle of the grounds of the castle. Then we have a number of knights with a big, big, huge, strong pole, and they're banging off the gate of the castle. And then we have a castle surrounded by water. And what we're going to ask our students to do is figure out what each of these were called. So, can I ask someone to come up and tell me what they think a moat is? Now, come on up here quickly, Jimmy, and say out very loud what you would have thought a moat was. Okay, what is a moat?
I think it's the water around the castle.
Water around the castle, good girl. Yes, indeed, it was water around the castle, because if you're swimming to get to the castle, you can't fire arrows. So it was a defensive feature around the castle. Thank you. What is a rampart? Can anyone guess? Remember we said about Roach Castle that it had something in front of it to stop people getting up? Yes. Could any student have a guess what it is? Rampart. No?
A ditch.
It's sort of like a ditch, yes. It's like a sort of a slope in front of the castle, a long slope into the ground. Again, people had to climb up this rampart. It was hard to fire their arrows, so well done. What is a keep? Yes, could you come up and tell us, please? Okay, what is a keep?
It's kind of like the castle inside of the wall around.
Okay, well done, yes. A keep is a tower inside, it's the main sort of building inside the grounds of the castle, a keep. It's a large tower inside, surrounded by a wall. Very well done, well done. Okay, what is a battlement? Okay, can anyone tell me what a battlement is? Can we take a guess? Battlement, so we described it earlier. What do you think a battlement was for?
I think it's the holes in the walls that people should...
Yes. Very good. On top of the walls, remember I said you'd have a row of stones and then you'd have a gap in the middle and then another row of stones. It was so that the guys with the bows and arrows, the archers, could duck out, fire their arrows, and then duck back in behind the stone. So it was on top of a castle, and you'd have these, what was called merlons and crenels, but really they're stone blocks and then a gap in the middle. What is a portcullis? Could anyone guess? Could anyone come up and tell me what they think portcullis is? Yes, up we come. What do you think a portcullis is?
Is it like kind of a gate?
It's a
slammed down.
Very good, yes. It was this iron gate that would be the very first thing that the people attacking the castles would come to. And as you could see, it was made out of these iron crisscross bars with these sharp spikes at the end, and it would come shooting down. Well done. What about a drawbridge? Could anyone tell me what a drawbridge is? Come on up here and tell the listeners what a drawbridge is.
The door, and it can go up and down.
Yes, it's like a bridge over. See here, you would have land, and then you would have water, and then you would have a bridge, and they could pull the bridge up from inside the castle. So once the bridge came up, they'd have no way to get into the castle. Okay, good girl. What about a murder hole? Could anyone tell me what they think a murder hole might be? It's very scary words, aren't they? Murder hole.
Is it the holes in the roof?
Good girl. And do you know what they've done? If somehow the attackers managed to get past the drawbridge, past the moat, past the ramparts, past the boys firing the arrows down at them, and managed to get inside the portcullis and got into the hall, the people inside the castle would pour hot oil down through these holes on top of the attackers, okay? What about a battering ram? Yes, could you come up and tell us what a battering ram is? Good man.
A battering ram is the pole that the people would carry and bash against the door to try and break it down.
Bash against the door. There was a great battering ram. Did anyone ever see, you know, probably too young, what was it called? Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And you remember the orcs attacking King's Deep, and they were using this, or Helm's Deep, and they were using this huge battering ram. Very scary. Okay, so well done. You really know your stuff, okay? Thank you for describing all them for our audience. So if we just move along here, we've just got a few more monuments to go, and then we'll have our quiz. Kilnasagat Pillar Stone. Now, Kilnasagat is not far from here, actually. It's at a place called Eden Napa in County Armagh. It's 3 metres high, almost, so it's very high. 3 metres high would probably be as high as that roof there. You see that? See this bit here? 3 metres. Just think about this. So it's tall, very, very tall stone. And it has different sort of inscriptions carved into it, different carvings. And one of the carvings in between two little crosses says that this stone was dedicated by a guy called Ternach. Can we say that name? Ternach. Ternach. And he was son of Serenbeck the Little. And his death is recorded in the annals. The annals were a sort of group of the writings by normally people involved with the church, monks, about events that happened in Ireland. Okay, they're a great source of information for people like me, archaeologists and historians, to find out about Ireland thousands of years ago. Or 1,000 years ago. So we know the Ternach died about 1714 or 1716. So therefore this stone can be dated to 700 AD. So standing stones can be found all over Ireland. Some of them don't have carvings on them, okay? And the thing about standing stones is we're not sure what standing stones were for. Archaeologists don't know for sure. I mean, they could have been used for ritual ceremonies, they could have been used for sacrifices, they could have been used for funerals, they could have been used for something to do with the stars, astronomical observations. And there has to be a distinction between, you know, the way I showed you core tombs where you might have a group of stones. Has anyone heard of Stonehenge? Stonehenge is a famous site in England where there's a number of big stones in a circle. There's a difference between finding these stones together in a circle and a standing stone, which is something different. Has anyone here know Ravensdale?
Yeah.
Ravensdale Woods. Have you been to Ravensdale Woods?
Yeah.
And have you ever come across the Druid Circle in Ravensdale Woods?
Yeah.
The Druid Circle is a group of standing stones. Now, there's some controversy about the group of this circle in Ravensdale, because some people argue it's a folly. Does anyone know what a folly is?
Like a
yes, very good, very good. One of the students said, like a fake. A folly, a lot of rich men in England, in Ireland, who had more money than sense, would sometimes in the garden build a folly. So it would be something that would look like something that was a lot older than it actually was. And there's an argument that the standing stones in Ravensdale were actually a folly, that they're only about 100 years there. But we can't be sure. But they're a circle of standing stones. They're different than these standing stones on their own. We're not sure what these were used for, but there is a wonderful one not far from here in Kilnasagat. So what I want to do now is I want to thank you all because you've been very, very patient and you've really sort of listened and joined in this morning. Did you enjoy that?
Yes.
Yeah. So do you think you know a wee bit more about archaeology and history?
Yes.
Well, we have a quiz to see who was listening.
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Okay. The first question, and I want you to come, if you're one sweet, you have to come running up to the microphone and answer the question. Okay, hand up, I pick you, and you have to talk really loud. No sweets if you don't talk loud. And I'm going to pick you, so there's no point in wanting to like pick who is who. Was it Mesolithic or Bronze Age people who built houses like upside down wigwams of straw? Yes? Up, quick, up here.
It was Mesolithic.
Mesolithic, very well done. Okay, thank you. I'm just dancing now. Okay. Can someone name me one type of burial tomb?
A court tomb?
Mm. A court tomb, very well done. Can anyone else think of a different type of burial tomb? Yes, come on up here now, quickly, yes. and say out loud what you think another type of tomb is.
Portal tomb.
Very well done, very well done. Does anyone know another type? Yes, out loud now.
Tunnel.
A passage tomb, very well done, good girl. And another girl over here, she must know the last one, come on up.
Monks.
Monks, well done, thank you. Okay, to this wonderful primary school, Sheila, I want to say thank you all. You've been absolutely brilliant. I really enjoyed you here this morning, and we hope that you'll listen to yourselves when the show is broadcast on the radio. Can you give yourselves a huge clap?
So, we've come to the end of our series, Heritage and Heroes. And I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we did making it. We visited some lovely schools, St Malachy's School in Dundalk, the Abbey CBS in Newry, Ardahi School, Primary School in O'Meath, and finally Sheila National School here on the road across McGlen. We hope you've learned a bit about the archaeology of this region and its history, and how interesting it is and how lucky we are to live here. Thank you to my recordist, Paul. Thank you for Liam for taking part in the programme. And thank you so much to all the students who took part, all the teachers, and to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. It's Dr. Alison Lennon here. Goodbye.
This programme has been funded by the Broadcasting